Hello, and welcome to the Tech CEO Essentials podcast. We are focused on the top areas that tech CEOs need to know. I'm your host, Tom Cooper, and this podcast is sponsored by my company, Right Hill Group, where we help leaders get more from their teams. Does your current leadership team have a shared, laser-like focus on a small, clear set of objectives? Do you have young leaders who will be ready to step into those leadership roles as soon as you need them to be ready? At Bright Hill Group, we can help you focus on what's wildly important and help you prepare your young leaders to be ready to step up when you need them. Give us a call. Now, today we're talking about risk management. What exactly does a CEO need to know about risk to protect and maybe even grow the company? Today, I've got the privilege of interviewing Carl Pritchard from Pritchard Management Associates. Carl is a genuinely nice guy, and I really enjoy my time with him. And he is also the risk guy. He's written two books on risk. The most recent is The Risk Management Memory Jogger with Karen Tate by QPC Press. He lectures, consults, and trains around the world on the topic. He also has the unusual reputation of making risk management fun. Who could do that? He's the principal and founder of Pritchard Management Associates and holds certifications in project management, risk management, and earned value. Carl, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks so much, Tom. I genuinely appreciate it.
So I think as we get started, one of the first questions I have for you is, why risk at all? What is the purpose of risk management? Why even think about that if you're in charge?
Well, I think the thing is, and most people, as soon as you say risk, everybody wants to run away screaming. And the actual truth to the matter is, the reason we should be embracing it is because it's our opportunity for planned clairvoyance. It's where we get to look into the crystal ball, and we get to be the ones who can say, well in advance of anything happening, here's what's going to happen. And tragically, too many people look at this whole thing as being, oh, it's just all the depressing stuff. You know, we could be late, we could be over budget, we could die. And it's always just this sadness and depression, when the reality is, this is our chance to actually focus on what might go wrong, and more importantly, how we can be the ones who come up with all the strategies and all the game plans to make it go seamlessly well.
Fantastic. As we start to think about that idea of how we're going to make it go seamlessly well, and I like that that word picture. How do CEOs do the most to set up their folks for risk success?
Well, the first step is actually kind of a tough one for a lot of CEO types, and that is shut up. And no, I'm serious. It's one of those things that makes me insane, and that is a lot of people are very quick on the trigger when somebody identifies something potentially negative to either say, "Well, that'll never happen." Well, that's one thing that'll kill risk right out of the box. The second thing is, if somebody brings up bad stuff, is to simply dump it back on them. If they identify a potential threat, if they identify problems, to simply push back and say, you know what, I'll tell you what, you solve that. That's not why they brought it to you in the first place. So we need to be the ones who are open to listen about risk. We need to be the ones who have a welcoming sense around us when it comes to anything risk management. And on top of that, we need to let people know well in advance just what things are going to make us crack a sweat and what things we don't even want them to worry about. That's where real empowerment lies. If we tell people, look, I am not going to freak out. I'm not going to be concerned if this, or this happen. But if that, or that happens, I'm going to be on you like a bee on honey. I am going to make your life a living hell. And if you drop something like that on them, well, what do you know? Then all of a sudden these people have a clear vision of where your lines are drawn. And that is perhaps the single most important thing that as an executive that you can actually pull out of your hat and do something that is a true service to the people you're working with.
So you're really giving people the kind of foreknowledge about, hey, here's what I'm thinking we're going to be worried about, and this is what I want you to pay attention to.
Yeah, and not only that, it's just a matter of, we all have hot buttons. We really do. And one of my best bosses ever, or perhaps my best boss ever, a guy named Ed, was just very adept at telling people, if you cross any of these lines, if I ever get a call from your customer and don't have a warning that call's coming, you're going to be in so much hot water. And he would tell you this up front. Mm-hmm. And he was my best boss. My worst boss ever was a guy named Michael, who was, and everybody in the office called him, the Prince of Darkness.
Wow.
No, he was. This guy was evil personified. He really was. He was just as dark as a boss can get, because when you got called down to his office, day one to day two, you never, ever knew whether he was happy with you or going to go ballistic on you. And there was a miserable risk manager, because what we really need are risk managers who are willing to say to us, if it goes, you know, if it's not one of these big hot buttons, tell me about it. Let me know. But frankly, don't expect me to go over the whole thing.
So one of the things that frequently comes up, though, is the people have trouble figuring out where to get started with risk, because you mentioned kind of the prototypical hot button. We might be late. We might go over budget. But, you know, we could be hit by an asteroid. How do you make a decision about what actually gets into the risk pool and what doesn't?
Well, and that's the first thing, is you want the risk pool to be very inviting. You want to get as much data into that pool as is possible. And a lot of people love going down the road of the, you know, famine, pestilence, locust kind of stuff. And they love dropping those little bombs, when the reality is those are what the book refers to. I don't know if you've ever read the book of The Black Swan. It's a classic risk text, because it says that organizations are ill-prepared to deal with the black swan. Black swan was a concept that basically said, up until a certain period of time, nobody believed that black swans ever existed until all of a sudden they found them. They were like, oh, crap, there are black swans. And a lot of organizations want to spend their lives wrapped around black swans. Just, oh, we should worry about all these things that have never happened to us, we've never had to deal with before, and all of a sudden they're going to come in and hit us like a meteor. Well, the reality is most projects do not die in a meteor crash.
Right.
No, most projects die the death of 1,000 paper cuts. It's the little stuff that we have done 100 times before, that we continue to do over and over and over again, and it's like, ow, that hurts, ow, that hurts, ow, that hurts. And then we sit there going, wow, you know, maybe I should have stopped that before, ow, that hurts, before it happened again. And amazingly, if you're looking for where to start, look at the things you see happening more than once in a series of projects and say, you know, I couldn't help but notice that we seem to have our customer upset at us again. You know, why are they upset with us again? They were upset last time. And somebody, oh, it's the same problem. It's just we didn't quite get it right this time. It's like, well, then let's talk about that as being one of our standardized risks. And there are standard risks. PMI, the Project Management Institute, actually has one that they consider to be the single most common risk on projects. You know what that is? It's fuzzy requirements. It's misstated, misspelled, and amazingly, organizations do this. They'll, well, let's just hustle it up on the requirements and start building.
Right.
And it's like, no, let's take pause. Let's step back. Let's take a nice, serious look at whether or not we can pull off the requirements and what those requirements are, and are they clearly delineated? And if they are, great. And if they're not, let's take pause again. And even if the customer says, we've talked about this, get to work. No, I just want to go over and make sure that we have some clear understanding and beat that sucker to death until we get it right. Sadly, organizations don't start there. They finish there. And that's the real problem.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. So what do we do? We have the pool is inviting, and we've incorporated the right things, and then we've kind of, I presume, prioritized those risks that are out there and identified the ones that I'm going to be really upset about, the ones I'm not so concerned about. Then how do we get them, keep those risks in check? You know, why do folks struggle so much with that?
Well, one of the big problems they have is people are looking for deer whistles, and I know that seems like a bizarre analogy, but
yes. When
I always, one of the things I do when I'm teaching a lot of risk management, I always make reference to deer, because many of us in our driving careers have whacked one or two, and it's noteworthy that the best prevention for whacking a deer is actually pretty mundane. It's not sexy, and it's not deer whistles. Do you know, you can buy deer whistles at Walmart, the little plastic things that mount on your front bumper.
Yep.
$7 a set, and they're supposed to actually protect you against whacking a deer. Well, the reality is they do work, but unfortunately, they only work when you're going faster than 25 miles an hour, and that's because there's not enough wind to get them going until then.
Yep.
And they stop being effective at about 43 miles an hour because of the Doppler effect.
Oh, interesting.
The deer just have time to look up and go, ha, boom, and get their clocks cleaned. So one of the things that organizations do, though, is they find a risk and they say, oh, let's fix that risk. Well, frankly, you know, you can buy deer whistles till the cows come home. It's not going to change the fact that it's still a limited efficacy strategy.
Hmm.
What you want to find instead are the strategies that actually work across multiple risks and actually solve multiple problems. With hitting the deer, you know, there are two basic strategies that are really kind of boring. One is find a pace car. Now, think about that. Find a pace car. Somebody who's, you know, who you can keep pace with, but you can stay about six or seven car lengths behind. So the odds of a deer squeezing into that little space, much, much lower than the odds of you whacking one on the open road.
And the guy in front of you might be the guy who hits the deer.
Exactly. That way he's, and you have six car lengths to react.
Yep.
Yeah, so but it's a dull strategy because you can't go as fast as you want. It doesn't let you drive the way you want. You've got to stay with this person. Ah, how annoying is that? Or something even more mundane, slow down. Do you know your headlights, even on bright, can only pick up a deer when you're going greater than up to 50 miles an hour? Above 50 miles an hour, even when you're just going the speed limit, 55, you can't respond in time. You literally don't have the response time. If you missed a deer going 55 miles an hour, that's because the deer missed you.
Interesting.
Yeah. So my point being that, now, if you drive slow, does that actually solve any other risks? Well, yeah, it solves the risk of hitting other things. It actually solves the risk of getting a speeding ticket. It solves a whole host of different risks, but it's boring. Oh, it is. It's dull, 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 painfully dull. But that's the way a lot of really good risk strategies are, and it's like requirements development. Now, is that exciting to sit down and actually have requirements checklists and requirements documents? And, no, it's pedantic, and it's mundane, and it slows us down. We don't get to code as quickly. You know, and the reality, that's exactly what we need to do. And it's a little tedious.
Right.
We need to embrace the tedium.
Embrace the tedium. So my project should take longer and cost more?
No, not at all. In fact, it's the cost of quality. It's the cost of conformance versus the cost of non-conformance. If you conform, do you have to go back and redo and rebuild because you missed requirements the first time? And the answer is no. You got it right the first time. It should save you time in the long run. Plus, you're plugging the holes before they ever start to leak. And all of this means that in the longer term, you're going to have a higher level of customer satisfaction. And to boot, you're going to have customers who go, wow, they got it right out of the box the very first time. And I'll tell you, that is worth its weight in gold in terms of a customer relationship.
So really what you're talking about is customer retention, customer satisfaction, both being tackled when you start to look at managing risks properly.
Yeah, because that's exactly it, Tom. And, you know, the whole point being that the real excitement in our project is when somebody finishes our project and goes, wow, nothing went wrong. and they look and they go, you know, that's kind of funny. Nothing went wrong. You know, you got lucky.
Pretty lucky, yeah.
Yeah. And the beauty of that is, and I can't tell you how much of my life people have told me how lucky I am. And being the risk guy, I kind of smile quietly to myself because it's like, no, I lead a relatively low-risk life. I genuinely do. And, you know, I follow all the little rules. I do all those things. And as a result, my life is perceived from the outside as boring. On the inside, I'm sitting here going, my life is low-risk, and that's exactly the way I want it.
Interesting. But all right, let me challenge you in one other area.
Sure.
Why bother? I mean, don't most big risks just show up unannounced? I mean, don't we just kind of get caught by surprise?
Yeah. And the beauty of it is if you've dealt with all the little mundane stuff that does always happen to us, when the big aw crap stuff happens, the stuff we look at and go, I had no idea that was coming. Mm-hmm. For one, when it comes to what in contracts they refer to as force majeure, the acts of nature or acts of God, when it comes to those, forgiveness is virtually total the first time out of the box.
Hmm.
So, and the classic example of that is 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
When 9/11 happened and you picked up the phone and talked to a client and said those fateful words, hey, you know what I promised you? Well, that's not going to happen.
Right.
And the client was on the other end going, yeah, we got bigger fish to fry here, too.
Hmm.
Nobody was looking at you saying, why not?
Hmm. Interesting. Nobody,
forgiveness on the force majeure stuff is virtually complete. And to boot, if you have a game plan, if you have a continuity of operations plan, which is hot right now. By the way, if you're looking for a second career,
yeah,
continuity of operations planning, those people are commanding the big bucks right now.
Interesting.
The COOP people. Yeah. Continuity of operations plans are hot. And organizations are driving, trying to find people who really know how to put together a game plan as to how do we rebuild after the bomb falls. And frankly, if you're the person who says, oh, I'm not going to plan for every little bit, but you tell management, but if the plane goes down, if the bomb drops, if whatever happens, the big event happens, here's the stuff I see as essential, here's the stuff I'm setting aside, here's what I'm doing to make sure we can get back up on our feet afterwards.
So I just want to jump in for a second on that.
Sure.
So I'm talking with a client, and they had a pretty significant failure to perform recently.
Yeah.
And I asked about it, and what they said was, well, here's the thing. There's this one part of our infrastructure that we have consistently underfunded for a very long time, and it blew up. And when it went, it took everything else with it. And so, you know, that's a risk management strategy. I mean, they said, you know, I don't know, we didn't dig into the whys, but I assume that they said, well, that one area, it's been steady for a long time, or it's, you know, it's proven itself as reliable, or we just don't want to focus on that because the market, whatever the reason was, right, for not focusing on it.
Huh.
But they're in a situation where, I mean, it's clearly the result of the choices they made that put them at greater and greater risk. And I wonder, you know, I wonder, do sometimes organizations just not even perceive the amount of risk that they have for making certain decisions?
Well, sure. As a matter of fact, a guy I went to college with was always a, he loved his beer and he loved his sweets. And the guy was just, you know, I mean, I won't say as an adult he kept doing that, but it was a function of, you know, when he was in his 20s and I knew him, you know, there was not a night he wasn't out hitting the bars,
mm-hmm.
and there wasn't a day he wasn't sucking down some serious Hershey bars.
Okay.
So, you know, that was pretty much his lifestyle. Well, that's fine when you're 20 and immortal.
Right.
But now, advance up to where he's 50.
Right.
And I actually had just been trying to track him down because I hadn't heard hide nor hair from him in quite some time. When I finally caught up with him, I found out he was in an extended care facility because he's living on dialysis.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, severely diabetic, and frankly, his prognosis is not good.
Mm, sorry to hear that.
No, yeah, but it kind of goes to the same point, and that is, could anybody realistically have predicted this was going to happen to this guy?
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it adds up, right? If you make those choices, yeah.
Yeah, there is no doubt about it, but people live under that assumption of, I feel good today. I didn't get hit today. Therefore, I'm fine. It's like people who drive without seatbelts on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people, I've never had an accident. Well, that's all well and good. But if you don't take that strategy, when it does hit you, you're not going to have the time or the capacity to react. And you're going to pay the price. So it goes back to what I said earlier. You can pay me now. You can pay me later. And tragically, you know, one of the things we really need to do is we need to be the pay it now people, the ones who are willing to go through the rigors that it takes.
So let me just jump in for a second on this too. So you said force majeure, people forgive you because they recognize that who's going to predict that you're going to have an earthquake in Maryland, for example.
Right.
You know, of course, there's no damage from that, but that's my, you know, that concept. But what happens when you talk about this other example that I gave where, yeah, I've actually made some choices to skip doing some things for a long time, and it came and bit me in a in an unpleasant and in far more visible way than I would have hoped. So what do you do with that? I mean, let's say you're in that situation. A client calls you up and says, Carl, what do we do, about this for next time? Or how do we make sure that we, this is awful. We don't want to do this again. What would you recommend that a company does to try and capture that's a significant risk that they're facing?
Well, and it's interesting because you're telling the dark side of it. One of my other clients, a financial services client, actually was facing the exact same thing. They had one old mainframe system that was made up of 100,000 lines of spaghetti code,
right,
that nobody, had touched in 20, 30 years. And everybody was terrified of this system because they knew you pulled one thread, the whole thing was going to unravel.
Right.
And so they had let it go. But interestingly, every time, and they're a very good risk organization, every single time a new project came online, they'd say, by the way, but if that system goes down, the party's over.
Hmm.
And fortunately, this client actually had the foresight and the prudence. They said, okay, we're recognizing this is going to cost us millions and it's going to be a major undertaking. We're going to unravel it and we're going to build it up from the ground up again.
Hmm.
And they did. They spent 3 years basically disassembling and reassembling this ancient system in modern terms. And, they were the ones who looked at it and said, this is a freight train coming our way. We know it's going to happen.
Hmm.
And frankly, anybody who gets hit once by the oncoming freight and doesn't look twice at the tracks afterwards, what are you thinking? Duh! And I've got to tell you, I know we're talking to the executive level folks here,
yep.
And just so you know, executive level folks, duh! It's one of those things where you do not want to be the one people are pointing the finger at going, how could you not see this coming?
Right, right.
You want to be the one who's spending the millions of dollars it takes, and everybody goes, why are we spending this on this system? It's not broken, it's still functioning. And being the one who says, you know what? I know it's still functioning. And I'd like it still to be functioning when I leave here.
Hmm.
I don't want to be the guy on whose watch this entire thing just crumbled and brought the entire foundation to its knees.
Wow. That's a tough message to carry forward, though, because people are not necessarily receptive to that because they think the new feature whiz-bang system is going to be the thing that's worth making the investment in.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I said. Tom, I told you before, my life is boring. No, I'm sincere about that. I love tedium. I really do. I got to tell you, it's funny because as we're having this conversation, I'm coming up on my 30th anniversary.
Congratulations.
And thank you. But, a lot of that is because my wife and I, we try to keep the high drama to an absolute minimum. She's a CPA. I'm a project management geek. It's kind of like, wow. Yeah, but the thing is, it's one of the beauties of our lives because I think the reason we've lasted that long is because we've taken care of the mundane,
right?
Of the boring, of the tedious. We can do other fun stuff on the fringes and adventure into the whiz bang, if you will, without harming the core capabilities of our system.
Well, that's really interesting. I think that's an interesting perspective to have, and I think it's certainly very valuable for folks to consider about how they're going to be able to identify the primary areas where they're going to be really upset. This risk I'm worried about, this risk I'm not so worried about. Giving them that guidance, I think, is important, and then collecting the risks and being able to decide how you're going to chase after and adapt to those pieces, and I love the idea that you're saying what we're doing is we're predicting. You mentioned being a clairvoyant, right? Because you said,
yeah,
look, we took the time to think through what could happen. All those things really, really powerful. As always, Carl, great stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Now, Carl has agreed to put together a checklist for us to help kind of pull these things together, and you can look for that on the BrightHillGroup.com website. Thanks again, Carl, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And for more information about Carl, Carl, what's the CarlPritchard.com? Is that the best place to go?
Yep, and it's Pritchard, PRITCHARD, Carl@CarlPritchard.com is my email address, and CarlPritchard.com is my website.
Fantastic. Well, for our listeners, join us next time for more Tech CEO Essentials. For Bright Hill Group, this is Tom Cooper signing off.